raise the whipping. They shed the dead weight of morals and sins. Set loose by Zeus, the space time, and lead the murderous horde known as Experience Grind.
Greetings, listeners, and welcome to Experience Grind Podcast, the podcast about getting older and the experiences we gain from movies, games, and pop culture. I'm Ryan, this week's host, and this is the final week of Action Movie December. We're wrapping up another series with Lethal Weapon 4. Joining us this week, it's Michael, or I'm Kunu if you're nasty. How are you doing?
Well, now I'm doing pretty nasty. I don't know about that. it's good to be here. Happy to be here.
In no way is he getting too old for this shit. It's Brian.
Oh, I assure you I am. Also, my favorite Mel Gibson movie is What Women Want.
Good choice. And last, we have the forefather of Experience Grind. It's Kyle.
I hate The Patriot with Mel Gibson. That movie sucks.
I like you went the opposite. Not a movie you love, but a movie you hate. Just to keep
it's a lot easier to hate on Mel Gibson than love.
Perfect. Well, as we discussed, we're getting into Lethal Weapon 4, the final movie in the Lethal Weapon series so far. And we're just going to hop in. We're going to get going. First off, we're going to set the stage here. Riggs and Murtaugh foil a flamethrowing phony Stark in an explosive opening that reveals the two are going to be father and grandfather. Independently, of course.
It is a wild-ass intro. I don't think it hits as hard as the building explosion in Lethal Weapon 3. But a dude with a machine gun and a flamethrower, pretty cool.
It's a fun cold open for sure. I guess it's more of a hot open. Yeah.
It is like the very first thing you see is just the store window just blows open because of fire. And I was like, all right, we know what we're doing here.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, this is an action movie, isn't it?
Oh, things blowing, man. How much is car insurance in this universe, I think?
How much is Murtaugh's house insurance?
One car explodes twice, and it's maybe the greatest thing I've seen ever.
And this is just the opening. It's a pretty strong opening.
I love the dude plays Van Halen, and he just pumps the volume up. Although it's the worst Van Halen singer. I can't ever even remember that guy's name. It's not Van Hagar or David Lee Roth. He did one record with him.
I appreciated that they didn't go with a hit. That he didn't put on Hot for Teacher or some shit that's like on the nose or something. I'm down for that choice.
I know wish it would have been on the nose. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I totally wish it was Hot for Teacher. That would have worked.
We have determined there are different audiences.
You also didn't like the on the nose music references last week in Monkey Man, so
right.
This tracks.
Yep. I am consistent. Alright. After that explosive opening, 9 months later, we do some seaside catching up with Riggs, Murtaugh, and Leo. Oh, and a shark, of course. The three spot a large approaching ship and hail it down with their badges. Well, they regret this immediately, and gunfights, boat stunts, and more explosions ensue.
Also, wait, I want to go back to the opening because Murtaugh just gets in his underwear very... He doesn't have to be persuaded, like, at all. He's like,
doesn't question it.
Just get in my underwear and then let him shoot at me? Okay, that's right, Riggs. That sounds like a smart play. And it's like, why?
Because at first, it sounds like he's kind of like, you know, playing dumb with him. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely going to do that. But you're like, oh, no, he's on board now. It doesn't matter.
He's immediately taking his pants off over his shoes very awkwardly. What are we doing? And then he does the chicken flap.
And I like that he questions the chicken flap, but not getting down to his underwear.
That's it. Uh-huh. Yep, that's the line. That is Murtaugh's line.
And then, now we can jump back forward because I love when their boat sinks and the fake rubber shark just floats on the surface. Yes! Oh, man, this movie's hitting all cylinders off the bat.
Even
before it sinks, and like every time they reference the shark, it has to cut back to the shark, and he's just like going back and forth every time.
Barely flopping around.
He's got the goofiest overbite. It's so fucking great. But no, it's just when it just stays right on top of the surface of the water when the boat sinks. That was choice, man. Also, this boat just comes up out of nowhere. I love that movie magic where if it's not in frame, it doesn't exist till boom.
Mm-hmm. This giant freighter came out of nowhere. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And why are people being shot on it?
I don't even know if we ever figure that out.
Reason.
It's just bad guys shoot people. So, ta-da. Do it right by the cops.
We need this a reason for these people to engage them. So, they hear gunshots for some reason.
That's it. Well, you'll find out in many of these, this movie does not care about details.
Well, don't they say later that, like, they kill someone on the ship to make an example out of them? So I'm just assuming that's what they heard.
It's just nice that they chose right until they get off the boat to do it when they're in the harbor of, you know, Los Angeles, one of the most populated places in the world.
We've reached the destination. It's time to set an example.
It's a Lethal Weapon movie.
Yeah.
100%. All right, next comes the introduction of a new threat. Our heroes don't know it yet, but they have just interfered in a Chinese human trafficking ring led by Benny Chan. This group proves to be well-connected and willing to kill without any hesitation. The killer of the red shirt, Crooked Fed? Explosion by train. Burgers, biscuits.
Only one time, this time. That's what I was saying later. When Mel Gibson, or I'm sorry, Riggs is being pushed and that one truck gets hit by a train, it explodes. And then a train coming another way hits it and it explodes again. And it's so amazing. I love how the first time, like, everything is blown up and blackened in the car. But then the guy sitting in the front seat is completely clean. He's just like, oh! And then it gets hit again. Oh, wow. I was cold on this movie at the start, I'll be honest, even though it starts hot. But man.
What? Yeah, what are you talking about?
Wow, okay. Isn't this guy that gets killed by the train here Frank Keeler, or Jack Keeler?
Yes.
Jack Keeler is the landlord in the Big Lebowski.
Yes.
It's just fascinating.
Right? All right, then after that, we hop back to the wake of the boat shootout where Burgers... Biscuits, Butters, a fresh-faced new detective, is introduced to the gang. Also introduced, a family of escaped traffic victims hiding out in Murtaugh's boat.
That's what Lethal Weapon needed, was another loudmouth quippy kidder.
There's a shortage of them, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I see. Yes, Chris Rock. For some reason, I went to the Hong, and I was like, "No, he was. When was he loudmouth and quippy?" I
thought Hong was pretty great, actually.
Oh,
it was funny because I remember in Lethal Weapon when we discussed Lethal Weapon 3 in Action Movie December in July, I was already over Leo's shtick at that point, and then when we bring in Chris Rock, it is funny that this movie sequesters them together. It's almost like they knew. It's like, all right, these guys kind of need to get it out of their system.
Put
them in a room together.
All right. With that, the focus then shifts to Riggs' relationship with Lorna, showing his softer side as he considers his future, a potential marriage, and a transition into a family-oriented life. Riggs' nose also sniffs out Butter's relation to Murtaugh. Surprise, surprise.
We never have, like, a woman's category specifically or a love interest, but they really, without killing her, really fridge Renee Russo in this flick. She does, like, nothing.
You know, if you can't kill her, make her pregnant. It'll take her out of the action a lot. Yeah. Just the same.
Yeah, you're not wrong there, though. She does get, like, a little a kick set piece when she's being held hostage. But context of that scene is three women being held hostage, two of which are 9 months pregnant. Also,
right.
They're 9 months pregnant when this movie skips ahead 9 months after they find out they're pregnant, which usually involves like at least a month of pregnancy. So both of them are like extremely overdue by point. Yeah? Just by like logic?
And they do not look it.
No, yeah, Rene Russo's belly changes sizes like all throughout the movie. It's a thing of wonder.
Maybe a title card that said 8.5 months later was more expensive than 9 months later.
They got paid by the
letter.
Yeah. By the character, yeah.
I bet you it was a studio note because they thought audiences were too stupid to connect the two. Eight and a half months, what does that mean? 9 months. Oh, baby! Oh! And then it makes sense. We can now pitch this movie to Middle America.
Yeah.
All right.
Uh-huh.
With that... Murtaugh's family also gets the focus as we're reintroduced to Trish, Rianne, Nick, Carrie. Oh, and then that Hong family we were talking about, the one Murtaugh found earlier. Riggs protests at first, but quickly decides to help keep this little secret.
Yeah, real pro immigrant is Murtaugh. Props to him. He gives the big speech and then takes in an entire Chinese family of nine to live in his house.
With seemingly no protest from the rest of his family.
They're just like, okay, yeah, bring him here.
Yeah, that makes sense. We've been through enough shit the last three movies. Like, whatever. This is child's play compared to that.
As long as you don't burn the house down. Oh, wait.
We also get, like, the mega cute Chinese kid.
Ping.
Little Ping.
That saves the day with his safety scissors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Always have to account for the little Chinese kid. That's just a rule.
In this scene,
didn't take into account. Also, holy fuck, Jet Li's haircuts.
The rat tail. Oh my god.
We'll get there. We're not there yet.
Okay.
In the scene with the kids of Murtaugh, Nick and Carrie, the two young ones, literally show up to get their money from their dad. Mm-hmm. And it really strikes me as like the actors also just showing up for the paycheck and to say, hey, remember us? We're part of the franchise. And then they just kind of disappear again. They're not important anymore. We've been in four of these
movies.
That's it.
They're not even threatened in the fire. It's like the main ones.
They're absent. They are completely absent. And they'll pop back up at the celebration because everybody is. But like, nope, check them out. They're done.
Glad Murtaugh's son didn't get caught up in the gang lifestyle. That was a real concern after movie 3.
Right.
And like, no, we're good. We're past that.
He's
we're
on the straight and narrow.
Yep. Psychopathic flamethrower.
Thank you, police.
LA police suck.
It's fair. All right. Next up is, oh, Captain, my captain. Back at the station, Riggs and Murtaugh learn of their imminent promotion to captain, a position that would bring certain safety and peace of mind to them and their families.
I didn't get any of this, especially at the end when, like, none of it mattered.
Well, it didn't even matter, like, 5 minutes later. Because, they're on the beat with Butters. Like, didn't you guys just get told you can't go out anymore?
I maybe misunderstood this. I thought it was like the intention was they are soon to be captains. Keep your head low. You're not there yet. You'll be there, but you're also not supposed to be on the beat, which they did absolutely disobey.
Yeah,
but they just
went out.
They were given the captain badge, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, immediately.
Oh, shit, they were.
They were promoted.
It was just like,
so that's just it. They're just captains.
Yeah, they were just captains.
That's a really weird anticlimax then to just do that.
Yeah, and then literally at the end they just
25 minutes into the movie
demoted back to sergeant. It's
like, oh, we have the insurance money now. Sorry. After all this,
been demoted.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. All right. Well, that's messy.
A weird one.
Super messy. All right. Also at the police station, Riggs misleads and gaslights not one, but two people in the span of 5 minutes.
He's good at that. One of them being his best friend, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because that's just fun. Actually, he gaslights him two times then. I forgot, because he puts up the picture constantly and then misleads him about Chris Rock being into him. All, again, within the span of 5 minutes.
It's fantastic.
That's captain material right there.
That's it. Riggs, role model. All right. Next up, the gang investigates the Chinatown situation. Riggs and Murtaugh team up with Butters to investigate the Chinese gang. But first, for some reason, need to stop and check off with Leo. Butters and Leo then proceed to get off to a wonderful start.
Okay.
Yeah, Michael,
okay.
You said it. They sequester okay. them.
Yeah, they really do. But it was nice because whereas I thought Lethal Weapon 3, like, overexposed us to Leo, because in him, he was kind of like the third man of the crew, having both Butters and Leo be like each half of the third guy kind of toned it down a little bit, which I appreciated a little bit.
Yeah. I agree with
100%
that.
100% agreed.
Yeah, I hated Leo a lot less in this movie, too.
There's a lot of variety in the comic relief.
I feel like there's a lot of, I don't want to say turncoats, because that's maybe too strong. But I remember a lot of not, I feel like I was the only one who did not like Leo for two movies now. I feel like there was a lot of Leo love. And now I'm hearing like, oh, they toned Leo down. I was like,
they did.
You motherfuckers, you
love
him.
I think it's for the better. I'm not saying I don't like Leo. Okay. I did not like Butters as much.
Oh.
Which is weird because I like Chris Rock. But I think like it's just, it's a little too much of the same. Like, he's just loud and brash and just not Leo.
Turns out you like Leo so much that anybody who's not Leo doesn't live up.
Maybe that's it.
How dare you stand where he stood?
Very.
I liked Leo in the second one. And then, like I said, they kind of cranked it up to 11 in 3, which I wasn't a big fan of. And now they kind of turned it back down to, 8.5 Leo in this, which I think is the right amount.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. And we'll get there later, but he's able to do some other stuff too, which is nice. All right. Well, with that, the trio then forced their way into a meeting with Benny Chan. They then pop off a couple of regrettably 90s jokes, then make their way onto Swa Sing Koo's radar. The audience knows this is Jet Li, but now they also know that Riggs and Murtaugh done fucked up.
You don't want to get on Jet Li's bad side.
He's got his Padawan hairstyle.
It's not good. That's really it is, not.
It is a Padawan really hairstyle.
I love that it does become a plot point later on in the film. But he is looking terrible.
And, he has all that Jet Li menace. And then as soon as he turns his head, you're like, this guy? This fucking guy? Come on.
It is a very 90s haircut for a villain. But I feel like it's a little late in the 90s. It's so fucking wild.
That more I think it this. Works.
More like regretly. You're welcome. That's why I'm here.
That's pretty good. I really, really like that.
I think it works. It shows a dude who doesn't give a shit about his appearance, only snapping necks. And that does.
He does a very good job of Riggs. Also just breaks anything, like this giant two-way mirror, and he just just shatters it just to be a dick.
Yeah,
because that's
also,
I guess,
sets off the fire alarm for the same reason.
With the umbrella. Goddamn, Mel Gibson, you smarmy fuck.
You mentioned the very regrettable 90s jokes. That was probably the one part of this movie where I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I feel like most movies from this era have more of that I cringe at.
Yeah. I was expecting more of it. And same. Just that was it. I was like, okay.
There was some got it out of our system, light homophobia from Murtaugh for the whole movie, but like not as bad as some of the stuff you'd see even halfway through the
2000s. 100%.
It probably could have been a lot worse, too, because the Chris Rock character was originally just supposed to be gay.
Right.
So. Mm. I'm sure had they gone that route, it
would have been real regrettable.
A much more 90s movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe that. Thank God they didn't. All right. Riggs and Murtaugh then engage in several scenes real quick, but one action-packed chase with Benny Chan's gang member. Mel Gibson's stunt double even gets to hang from a Chinatown rooftop in very dramatic fashion.
I'm so glad you said his stunt double.
It's the best work he gets to do in this movie.
It is the most noticeable, though.
That's it. Yeah. You can see that stunt double very clearly.
You could very obviously at one point see, like, the leather jacket was riding up on the wire. And so he looks like he's got, like, a hunchback when he's, like, holding on.
Oh, sure. That, yeah.
That was pretty fun. Also, I had this exact same leather jacket for like a long time, and I didn't realize it till just now.
Wow.
When I watched this movie.
Now I'm wondering if it's the same one that I had too.
The black with the two white stripes down the...
Oh no, the one I had had a single white stripe that went across the chest.
No, I think mine had him, yeah, mine had him done the thing. I've seen that one too. I know that one you're talking about, yeah.
I know who I am. I've never had a leather jacket.
I know now that I never should have.
Yeah, I don't have mine either. I'm like, that's not a thing for me.
What?
Put on my leathers in case I need to go into a controlled slide.
You seem like a leather jacket dude. I don't know.
I'm not, though. It does. I don't pull it off. I'm much more.
I don't believe it.
Tracksuit.
Same.
All right. Well, that's. I appreciate that look too. All right. Murtaugh and Hong bond offer. Sorry. That was a bad sentence. Murtaugh and Hong bond together over dad shows and tequila. Then Murtaugh offers Hong his father's watch.
Yeah, just because, you know.
Yeah.
We have to.
If it sounds like I left anything out, why not? I didn't. That was enough. The progression.
Yeah. Yeah. We care about this guy because he's got the watch that, you know, he's not giving to his son or anybody else. It's a man he's known for 2 days.
Listen, we need you to like Hong, damn it.
Nothing bad's going to happen. Feel something later. Just like him. But he's going to be fine. The entire I don't understand anybody's motivate. Like, what the fuck is the criminal Chinese gang doing?
Well, I can explain it. It is stupid, but I can explain it.
So
but it's stupid.
Okay, yeah, we'll save it for when we get there. But it's so
dumb. All right. After that, we cut back to the police station for more exposition and antics with Butters and Leo. Just a little nice fun moment between the two, more yelling, again, sequestering the two. Then surprise, after a brief bit of exposition and some coffee on a shirt, another showdown at the House of Murtaugh, this time with Sing-Ku and several thugs holding Trish, Rianne, and Lorna hostage. Murtaugh's house goes all backdraft before Little Ping rescues everyone with childproof scissors.
You also get, like, the most famous scene in any Lethal Weapon ever at this point with the Jet Li fight where he disassembles Riggs's gun in, like, an instant.
In one deft move.
That was pretty sick.
It is really fucking cool.
It's really cool.
It was a trailer shot, if I remember correctly, because it was so fucking cool. And still is really cool. Holds up.
And the way he kicks Rene Russo when she opens that door, so bad.
So good. So bad. It's like a weird sideways backwards kick, but he just like looks forward the entire time.
Right? Like, how's your leg moving like that?
And he knew she was coming out that door. It's perfectly timed. He's such a ruthless killer. And we haven't even seen his weapon that might make an appearance later on in the show, too. This unique, like, it's like prayer beads?
I think they're prayer beads.
Yeah,
they are prayer beads.
Mm-hmm. Is it Duddy Snap? Nobody died in this part, right? He did kill the truck driver guy, though. He snapped his neck. He did the...
Before that's the, right. The
or the boat driver guy, the boat captain. Was that the big chase scene on the highway, or is that... We're getting there.
So Murtaugh and Riggs immediately pursue Sing-Ku in an epic highway chase fight around an in-transit oversized trailer, which concludes with the pair driving through an office building, quite literally.
I love an over-the-top chase scene.
This chase scene is ridiculous. You guys mentioned the stuntman. I noticed him a lot when he's riding the table in the highway, but that scene is fucking choice, dude.
It's so much fun.
It was a lot of fun. I did note, like, when they're in the building and, like, the plastic screen is, like, over the road and they're kind of, like, out over the road. I felt myself kind of being like, oh, man, this might get bad.
Little butthole pucker?
Yeah.
The stakes here. I love they just were like, you know that somebody was just driving down the highway going by one of these modular homes. They're like, fight scene on one of those. That'd be badass.
That's what a producer does. He's like, hey, man, what if we do this? It is, dude, when he's like, he's literally surfing, he's holding like the plastic sheeting and he's on the table and he's like surfing down the highway. It's very Teen Wolf, but it's so awesome. And then he jumps in in the car. That's what I got. Sorry.
No. And then he jumps in the car.
Yeah. I liked when he's riding on the back of the table and he's using the legs as like kind of projectiles and he's throwing them at the car window. Oh, yeah,
he does totally throw one through a windshield like he's Superman.
It's so neat. It's just, it's a creative scene through and through.
How insane. I love that this highway just, for some reason, goes directly at an office building, swerves around it, and then comes back to continue. For no reason other than to fucking ramp through this fucking thing and come out the other side unscathed and still continue the chase.
Yeah, otherwise it's the straightest, longest highway you've ever seen in your life. Uh-huh.
It's got to go around that one building. I like that there was a reasonable amount of damage done to this Grand Am going through an office building. You know, it popped the tires. That was it.
Yeah.
I'm glad that they did that because I fully expected they were going to cut back to like the inflated tires like in the Dukes of Hazzard when like they destroy those cars and then they're just like drifting out in like pristine condition again.
Just for the car to get T-boned by a truck in traffic. It's incredible.
Yeah.
There's several neat little car stunts. Like one of them, like the car goes up over Riggs and Murtaugh's car while Riggs is, or his stunt double, is outside and you see his hand like almost get clipped by this other car pop up over it. And like there's just like, wow, just so many close calls. This is top tier. This is good shit right here.
It's also literally every car explodes when it gets in an accident in this movie. Every single one, they just kaboom, giant fucking fireballs. Why would anybody drive in this universe?
Right? The audience watch out loves for potholes explosions. And everything.
Dangerous out there in LA.
It's action.
It's so awesome, dude. It's so fucking awesome.
Okay. Well, after the fight scene, after the chase scene wraps up, we get to a segment I call The Tooth Hurts. More comedy is provided as Leo gives a very painful distraction for Riggs, Murtaugh, and Butters at a dental office. The trio then interrogate Uncle Benny using laughing gas. Butters' secret is finally revealed, as is the location of the Hongs and the mention of the Forefathers. Is this Metal Gear?
They think it is. Kyle. They go all American. Because, of course, like the Chinese national that's doing everything for China is going to make his reference to America's forefathers. And they're just like, yeah, it's the forefathers, duh.
It's pretty good. It's a pretty really good...
the laughing gas scene.
I love it. It becomes a Schrodinger's joke later, too, when the token Chinese cop on the force is like, wait, forefathers? You said ancestors. He's like, yeah, you know, your forefathers. No, they mean the number four. What?
The four fathers. Two words, man.
How lucky were they had a cop of Asian descent on the force? I mean, wow.
It goes very samurai cop in this flick. Very samurai cop, except that they actually have a Chinese person instead of Joe Chinese person.
These are also the four fathers, right, of the triad being three, so that really feels like a stretch to get to four, so we could do that.
And also
miscommunication.
Well, one of them's old, so maybe he doesn't count.
Four is also like a very superstitious number in Chinese culture, which
one's the assistant, I don't know if it's just... to four father,
because four means like death. Or it's like pronounced the same as death, so it's an unlucky number.
I thought four was a lucky number.
No, four is unlucky in Chinese, in Cantonese specifically.
Well, then it ends up being unlucky here too, as we'll find out.
Yeah, also, I mean, we'll jump to it again. I love that the forefathers, two gets shot in the head immediately, and then two just, we have no idea what the fuck happens to it. They just run off screen and bye-bye!
Yep. So, after this, Hong is reunited with his uncle in a money counterfeiting operation, all under Sing-Ku. To prove a point, just because Sing-Ku snaps Hong's neck and then tells Uncle to get back to work.
Uncle also dies off camera. They just mention it later, like, oh, there's three dead bodies here. And why would you kill a guy that's like a master counterfeiter?
You only needed the money just to get... That's it.
Why are you using counterfeit money?
They're not greedy.
They already have the infrastructure to put all these people into slavery to make the money, but instead they're having them make counterfeit money.
And only one time! Just once!
And then they're like, okay, we got what we needed.
Not to, like, rain on the stupidity, but I thought it was, like...
Do it.
They needed him for, like, the template, and then they could just print as much as they wanted.
That's true. Now that they have the template, they probably don't need him anymore.
But I feel like new currency designs come out, and you kind of want the guy that's good at doing that, that already does it. Keep him around. But you kill his family, you kill him. And then it's all to counterfeit money to pay for a prisoner exchange from a corrupt Chinese official. Like, it's so elaborate.
They wanted to fit as many crimes in there as possible.
That's what it is, yeah.
Why does the LAPD give a fuck? It's counterfeit Chinese money. That's like Interpol federal shit. What the fuck?
I think this is... I don't honestly know what the public consensus was on police at the time, but it feels like an easy thing to go after. Right? Like, we can root for police who do this, like, high-level stuff that's not really what police do, but they can root for. It's almost like when Rambo goes across the border and he's taking back, like, human traffic victims and, like, fighting the illegal immigrants. It's like, we know what you're doing. You're just doing, like, this high-level thing because it's safe. And this is all very safe, because if they were doing real police stuff, you'd have the training day or end of line. And those are not fun movies. Those are not fun at all.
King Kong ain't got shit on
wigs.
We want
fun. So we have to do something very, very easy and broad and big.
Something
Chinese
lower stakes.
Corruption at all levels above the police that is not the police. That's safe and easy. We can do that all day.
Plus you get Jet Li.
That's a win-win.
They needed a reason to get Jet Li. That's why.
That's what it was.
That's enough. That's worth it. Worth the trade-off. Okay. After an attempt to murder Riggs and Lorna, again, by train, is foiled, everyone regroups and thinks over all the clues, doubling down on catching Sing-Ku. That almost rhymed. We learn that the forefathers referenced earlier were actually forefathers of the Triad
what?
Gangs being brought out of prison with the counterfeit money.
What?
Whoa. There's your twist.
I didn't even get the triads with the forefathers, and that's dumb on such a different level that I think it's awesome.
The most basic level. The most basic.
They're called the fucking triads. It's so
All right. With that, the whole police crew confront Hua Sing-Ku in the middle of his transaction with the crooked government official. Gunfights ensue. But nothing seems to be able to stop Sing-Ku and his sweet, sweet martial art skills. Not even a forklift. Believe it?
Mel Gibson is such a dick in this scene when he just is honking the horn for like a straight minute. And then he pulls up and still does the... and then he's just smiling like such a dick. He's like, ha ha.
Guess who's here?
Asshole energy. Which is perfectly Mel Gibson. That's why he's so good as Riggs. Because...
Yeah.
The pure audacity to just walk right into the middle of like this high level gang money exchange. It was like, I'm not sure what my plan is after this, but I know how to make a goddamn intro.
He's like, hey man, fuck you.
I feel like that's the kind of attitude you have though after somebody tries to kill you via train.
And you see the same car blow up twice.
Damn. It changes.
These guys are serious.
Now I just got to be a dick to these guys, I think.
Did Murtaugh's house explode when it was on fire, or did it just burn?
I think it just burnt.
Yeah, just burnt. They really messed
it
up.
It wasn't a car.
Yeah, it's a house, not a car.
That's stupid me. How dumb. My bad.
Now, if it was Riggs' house, it could have exploded.
Bitch, by the way, it's a trailer that he's building a nursery? What is happening with this house?
It looks like the trailer is somehow attached to the house.
There were like two trailers with like a building structure around them. I don't know.
You guys have not lived in poor areas like I have. This is pretty normal. You have a trailer, and you build onto the trailer to make your trailer better than the other trailers.
Okay.
That's classic LA beachfront property.
That makes sense too, because weather. What are you going to do? You don't want to invest in anything real serious.
the trivia in this movie, I wish I watched the Rockford Files. Apparently, this is the same place where his trailer is.
That's pretty cool.
So that's right. A 60s detective.
Do you think if Mel Gibson had been forklift certified, he would have been able to beat Jet Li sooner?
He did pick him up, which was intense, but I don't. No. I feel like Jackie Chan could have got out of that like that. What? Yeah. It's a fucking forklift, bro.
Jump off of it.
You're Jet Li. What are you doing? Just be like, yeah. What the? And slide through. You're done.
Oh, I think he'd just be flipping around. He'd have no problem with it at all. Yeah. There's no contest. But with that, we go into climaximum action. What happens when you kill an unstoppable killing machine's brother? Just a real pissed off Jet Li, apparently. We get another epic rain-drenched fight scene, too. This time, it's a two-on-one. You gotta have the
rain-drenched fight scene, yeah.
It's a staple at this point, right? Maybe a callback, specifically to the first one, possibly. Yeah.
The first one and third ones definitely had wet fight scenes. I can't remember the second.
Mm-hmm. This one, this definitely feels like a finale. I don't know, especially maybe the second half onwards. It feels like they're kind of wrapping things up, so it makes sense that they tie back like as a kind of cyclical thing. That's what a lot of franchises do. So that'll make sense here.
I love they have that whole, like, actually, you know what? Let's let him go. We can come back, get him later. Talk. Like, I am getting too old for this shit. And they're about to, like, walk. And it's like, well, wait. He did that one cool thing. Maybe we should fight him.
Mm-hmm.
Which is real cool. I liked it a lot.
Well, yeah, and Brian's referencing that Riggs and Murtaugh are fighting for their lives against Sinku, who is beyond pissed. But finally, we find his weakness. Rebar and underwater bullets.
Underwater bullets are going to get you every time.
The rebar fight scene is just, like, how? How? When he picks him up by it, dude, you are... What?
Yeah.
It's so brutal. Yeah. And then he's swimming with it and still fight. No, what? No!
I thought he was going to just get stuck in the underwater, what was it? The GMC SUV that they had to show earlier, go off the end of the dock, so we know it's down there later. I thought he was just going to get stuck in it.
I did.
Got to get the gun. Yeah, this is America.
It's all about the gun.
And like... Jet Li looks so surprised when, like, he gets shot underwater. He's like, oh, I didn't think that would work. You got me.
But it's also, I feel like he's a dead man walking. There's a giant piece of rebar through you that you've been picked up and thrown around by.
That's the power of family. Fast and the Furious taught us that.
This is the fight scene where, like, Mel Gibson grabbed his rat tail, too, right? Or yeah. Riggs. That was a nice touch. Because he's choking him out, and he's like, oh, yeah. Fuck your stupid little hair.
Gonna yank on your dumb hair.
All right. Well, after the fight scene and Sinku sadly perishes at the bottom of the ocean, that's a wrap. Riggs has a final emotional moment with his dead wife, and Leo comes to relate with the story of his dead pet frog, who he used to kiss, hoping it would become his princess and mother, but then he ran over it with a bike. You know, that same old story.
Fucking
then we got
Leo.
Two babies.
Well, yeah.
Who else
yeah.
but Joe Pesci it's could coming. Deliver that monologue? Please, enlighten me.
Mm-hmm. It was a nice scene.
It worked. It worked. Trot. For somebody who did not like Leo in the last two movies very much at all, I thought it worked pretty well.
It was humanizing. It was heartfelt. It was still silly. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I did think the callback to earlier in the movie where, like, Leo was saying, yeah, I'm trying to work on my tailing abilities. And then Mel Gibson's like, were you tailing me? And he's like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I liked, he told his wife, it was a nice little gesture, too. He's like, you picked a weird-looking angel.
I laughed angel, yeah. so that hard at nice. That.
Mm-hmm.
That was a really nice little touch, too, so.
Anyways, it's... Well, Leo is exactly what Riggs needs at the time, right before getting in the news that the baby is coming. He rushes to the hospital, and Riggs and Lorna get married by a rabbi while their baby is practically on the verge of crowning.
Yeah, so it's just so silly. I don't... I feel like Shane Black didn't write this movie, but this is a very Shane Black scene.
Yeah, I think a lot of this feels very Shane Black. I think the banter is pretty good throughout, and it has like that wit that Shane Black brings. And you're right, a lot of these are very kind of situational comedy bits that he would find himself doing. All right. Then Lorna and Rianne both deliver healthy babies as Riggs and Murtaugh, and as Michael referenced earlier, hashtag family, celebrate in the hospital.
Family. With the digital camera vending machine. Or no, the disposable camera vending.
Very 98.
Really dated the movie hard.
100%.
And also the Joe Pesci not trusting putting his credit card in a machine when, like, dude, you throw that fucking thing in everything. Like, beep, 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 beep. Scan me. Tap me.
I feel like he'd be much more paranoid about it with his hang-ups.
The, again, Renee Russo does, like, nothing in this movie.
Hey, she gives birth to a healthy child after lots of smoke inhalation.
Yeah.
That's it.
And lots of kicks.
Yeah.
No, you're right.
Yeah. She does not do anything in this movie. No kicks to the belly. And she was face up while laying down.
Yeah, she got kicked and fell on her back. Yeah. Kicked in the face and she passed out.
Very thoughtful of those.
Thank the Lord.
It's all very lucky. All right. Well, credits roll, featuring photos of the cast and crew members throughout the franchise's history. And then that is a wrap on Lethal Weapon 4.
That was a nice little send-off. Mm-hmm. All right, gentlemen. That's Lethal Weapon 4. As always, well, not always, because it's very recent. I think Sean invented it like this year or last year. We have the kick-ass-ometer, gentlemen.
Invented.
Tried, true, patented, stolen, all the things to give you the best, most accurate score on an action movie's action-ist essence.
It's action. Just
put more action.
The action-ness. The total score, it's 23. We just
that's correct.
Thank God I got good memory because I'm bad at math. our first category in the kick-assometer is the action quality level. This is the highest level we can get. 5. I'll go ahead and kick off. Like I said, this movie started a little slow for me, but hot damn, by the end, it's zooming. There's action set pieces. There's hot car chases. There's everything you could ever want in an action movie. I thought I'd come in lower, but I can't, man. I got to give this the highest marks. I'm giving it a 5 on the action scale. So
wow.
A 5.
It might come in hot. I thought it was going to be a 3. Then it jumped to 4. We're at 5 for me. Ryan, what about you, baby?
I love the rhyming. That was beautiful. Man, I think, God, wow. You came off, like, negative in the beginning. I thought this movie started strong and only had, like, momentary dips throughout. I loved the action throughout. I don't know that it's my top tier of all time, so I can't give it the 5 because it's not... It doesn't elevate anything in any specific way. It just does everything amazingly well. So I think that's a 4.5 out of 5 for me. With Michael? That, yeah.
Yeah, I'm the exact same as Ryan. I think it is just good, solid action all the way throughout. You have one really kick-ass scene, the car chase scene, and then Jet Li's martial arts are fantastic throughout. Everything else, nothing really sets a new bar, so I'll go 4.5 as well.
I would say, like, I did expect a little more in the choreography aspect with a Jet Li type. You still get a lot of just the Hollywood haymakers out of all of our big chiseled jaw action heroes. But even still, at the end of the day, I justified it. I'm not watching a kung fu movie. I'm watching the Lethal Weapon movie. So.
Right.
Brian, what about you? Where are you at, buddy?
I am also at a 4.5.
Damn.
For the same reasons that everybody just said.
So we'll give it the 4.5 average for the all of us. Next up, we got the antagonist, the big bad, the main villain, the guy with the terrible haircut. I think we could call Jet Li the antagonist. You guys would agree? Not Uncle Benny, not the corrupt Chinese government, although that is the enemy of us all.
Well, we can
they are both there, but they're not.
I include both of them.
They're not the big bad.
Okay.
Mine's sort of an amalgam.
An amalgamation. Ryan, where are you at then on the scale? Top score of 4 on this category.
I think I'm at a 3. This is not the most intimidating Jet Li has been, but he is almost a fucking Terminator here. And I do think Uncle Benny is a lot of fun. and he's got personality, and he gets to shine before his untimely death. Both are very memorable. So, man, I might even be a 3.5. I'm gonna be a 3.5. I'll do 3.5.
3.5 for Ryan.
Yes.
Kicking it to Bri Guy. Where are you at on the antagonist ometer?
I'm at a 3. I feel like they could have done more with Jet Li. Uncle Benny is a lot of fun, but not an intimidating person at all. The Chinese general ends up being a big part of this because a lot of the violence ends up happening between the triads and the government, the Chinese government officials, or whoever these people are, ends up turning into a gang war. And that's where you end up with most of your body count, and we'll get there. But I also never really felt like, and this might just be a symptom of what you get with a franchise like this, but Riggs and Murtaugh were never in any real danger. So it's a 3 for me.
I will also jump in and say, for the most part, I think 3. I don't have to expound anymore. You guys covered every base. Jet Li carries a lot, but he doesn't take it across the finish. I'll add that. Michael, where are you at, buddy?
I'm the exact same way. I'll give it a 3 as well. With Jet Li, like, he has what? One line in English in the entire movie. And then, but like, it's still pretty intimidating, but like, give me a little more of that. And then it was the forefathers are introduced as this really like grisly, intimidating group. And then, like you said, Kyler, I was like, oh, two of them just fucking die immediately. And like, they weren't really any danger. So, yeah, Jet Li was great. It all could have been better.
This movie has some of those telltale features of we were writing this while we were shooting it.
Yeah, 100%.
So, you know.
Or how do we connect these action scenes? We don't care about anything else.
Yeah.
Make it make
sense.
Kind
of a staple in a lot of these action movies.
Get us to the next set piece.
It's wild how many of these start out as completely different movies that get modified into these things. That happened a lot in Die Hard.
Yeah.
Like Die Hard 2 was a completely different movie and they just plugged John McClane in. So
the original script for this movie ended up becoming Die Hard with a Vengeance.
That's nuts. Absolutely nuts.
Wow.
Before it got completely rewritten.
Huh.
This also feels like one of those that had like 5 different writers and two
that
of them
worked.
Were uncredited. Yeah.
Warner Brothers was trying to buy the script Simon Says for the Lethal Weapon franchise and they got beaten to it. And it became Die Hard with a Vengeance.
I think it would have worked.
Which, yeah, I knew that was a completely different one, too. It did work for him. Okay. Brian mentioned this earlier, when the very next category. The body count category, you know?
The body
count.
How many,
what are we stacking up? How many mindless, faceless goons are going to meet their untimely demise? Michael, why don't you kick us off? Where are you at on the body count? Top score of 3 in this category.
I'm, you know, even including the pretty awesome climactic fight scene where bullets are flying everywhere and people are getting shot, I'm still going to go a 1 because I feel like for the rest of the movie, not a whole lot of people actually die in this movie. You do have the henchmen from the car chase scene and I guess the people from the train, but there's not a lot of carnage elsewhere, I'll say. At least I thought.
Okay. Ryan, what about you?
I completely agree. I don't think I have anything else to add to it. I 100% agree with Michael. 1.
A 1. We're at 2 1s. Brian, where are you taking us?
I had the exact same thoughts, but I did give it a 1.5 because of that.
Okay.
That last scene.
I came in at a 2 because I thought there was a fair... I'm always high on the body count scale, I'm figuring out too. But like, I don't know, we had 3 dead bodies at the beginning. Kind of a lot of like the boat captain gets killed. I feel like there was a constant pace of people getting killed throughout the movie.
They kill off Hong and Uncle Benny, some characters you care about. Yeah, I
mean,
can see that.
We shared tequila with him, you know? I cared about that guy. He had
Murtaugh's watch.
It was personal for me, okay? And I took that, so. Ryan's saying 6?
1.5.
Oh, 1.5. Yeah, I agree. 1.5 is what we'll give.
That was
one.
The average. I'm averaging 4.
I was like,
I know Sean usually
six,
does the calculator.
Like, it's a top of 3.
Yeah, 1+1.
I'm the calculator.
I was trying to look
two.
At the numbers from previous categories. I was like, I don't have a 6 anywhere. I'm not sure where he's getting this.
One dot.
Oh, his head is the da. Okay.
I see.
Following up on our body count is the setting theme of the Lethal Weapon universe. On this one, our top score is also 3. I'm going to come down, again, fairly in the middle. I feel it captures what I imagine a day in the life of an LAPD is. It's just all hectic violence and car chases, right? That's what I'm led to believe happens in LA every day. So, I think it captures that pretty well. It captures the setting of the generic action movie, too. It's another one of those that, like, so many things come out of it, and it set up so many, like the final confrontation in the rain fight, and the bad guy, like, that is an unstoppable force. Thank Cameron. So I'm going pretty much 2. It doesn't expound on those themes, but it doesn't make me feel uncomfortable. Brian, what about you?
I agree with everything you just said. I didn't expect the first word that came to my head after the movie ended to be, well, that was kind of cute. It's a weird thing to think about an action movie, but like with all the family theme and all of the growth and the acceptance of Leo and everything, I was like, oh, that's fucking cute. It's a cute ass action movie. But yeah, it's a 2 out of 3 for me.
Okay. Ryan?
I'm going to go slightly higher. I'm going to go 2.5 for everything you said, but I will add in, yeah, that cute is very similar to like the same feel that the Fast and Furious franchise honed in on, and they got that formula down. But like Lethal Weapon, like, understands, like, it is the family themes, and like without like the pregnant women and Rianne and all this stuff, like, it kind of doesn't feel like a Lethal Weapon movie, and like all this melodrama, like, it is, it's part of the DNA, right? And I feel like they understand the themes, they double down on those themes, and then you add in like a really cool Chinese theme, and you bring in Jet Li and all this stuff. And though it's not Jet Li's best, bringing him in, he's fucking cool. He is so memorable compared to like any other Lethal Weapon villain outside maybe Gary Busey. I think that's notable. Like, out of 4 movies, Jet Li's the only other one. And I think it's the Chinatown setting and all this stuff that brings extra flair and flavor to a formula. So not only do they have their theme nailed down perfectly, they're also like reinvigorating it with like a fresh new theme as well. I love this. I think this works in so well. I'm 2.5, maybe even 3 if I wanted to be generous, but ooh, I don't. I'll do 2.5.
Don't want to be generous.
All right, Michael, where are you at?
You guys actually talked me up, because I was, woo, like 1 maximum, but now I think,
ooh,
now I think I'm going maybe even 2. Gosh.
Okay.
So I was really honed in. This was a big problem for me in, I think, Lethal Weapon 3, where it was just like, if they didn't go to the Kings game, I wouldn't have known this was even in Los Angeles. Who gives a shit? Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, you do have, it's true, it's like the big city Chinatown feel. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's not something you get, you know, here in Podunk, Indiana. That's true. Mm-hmm. And then the theming, expounding off of that, what I loved about this late Lethal Weapon movie compared to the late Die Hard movie, where we've discussed that was like John McClane just becomes a superhero, nothing you do matters because he's going to survive it. We have all these moments in this movie where Riggs is like, God, my body's betraying me. What's going on? And Murtaugh's like, dude, that's what I've been saying. We are too old for this. Like, we can't do this anymore.
We're too, like, old for this shit.
He's too old for this shit. And like, Riggs is kind of accepting this, like, okay, I can't be this absolutely fucking unhinged Lethal Weapon anymore. Like, I'm getting old. And I thought that was a pretty nice, the more I thought about it, and I was like, yeah, that's a pretty nice message from this movie. So yeah, I'll go 2.
All right.
I love it.
Speaking of getting old and losing the prime of your life, the next category is the muscles category. Top score of 2 here. I'm going to come out of the gate hot, fellas. I'm giving a big 0 on this. A big old, ooh, goose egg. The only muscles I even remember seeing in this movie is when Murtaugh takes all of his clothes off and we get a middle-aged black man. And that's about it. Nobody else is cut. We don't see anything really expository. So yeah, I'm going goose egg. Ryan?
I think that's a very fair argument. I have nothing to add. I'm with you. Goose egg.
Michael?
I will go goose egg 0.5. Okay. Because in addition to Murtaugh, the scene where they're in the locker room.
Oh, shit, that cop in the fucking just locker room.
Absolutely jacked for no reason.
He is. For no background. Nobody says anything. He's in the background. That's it. You're right. Goddamn.
Yeah, I'll give it strictly for those two. 0.5 is
accurate.
I'll go 0.5 for that.
Okay. Bry Guy, what do you think?
I'm also going with a 0.5. I think it's an appropriate level of muscle for aged cops. And then you get all that Jet Li goodness. But yeah, the Jack guy in the locker room, that Murtaugh and his boxers.
I gotta amend mine. I gotta give a 0.5 too.
Same. I swear I think for myself, but yeah. Michael convinced me. The 0.5.
That is a I totally forgot 0.5. About Muscle Jock in the locker room, but as soon as he said it, I was like, shit, yeah, that dude was, I thought that was Duke Nukem.
Because I was kind of keeping the meter in mind while watching the movie, and I was like, man, we haven't seen a whole lot of shit in this movie.
No.
And then he just pops out of nowhere in the background. I was like, there it is. That's what we
There's
needed.
There's the check. All right. Well, and speaking off of the muscle aspect, the next category is the butts aspect, where again, fellas, I'm coming in goose egg on this one, and I don't think I'll be convinced. I don't remember a single butt, breast, ball sack, nothing. I'm goose egging it. Ryan?
Oh, no, I want to hear the arguments, because I also think it's goose egg until Michael's like, you forgot this.
Well, we
butt.
Can amend. You get an amend.
Well, then I'm what zero, because butt? I don't remember butts in this movie. Outside of, like, closed butts, but like, every movie has...
Every movie has clothed butts.
Brian, yeah. What about you?
Zero. There's no butts.
Okay.
Michael?
Zero. No butts.
All right, we're all zeros.
I was waiting for
the
you don't remember the graphic birth scene?
Can you guys remember back to minute 47? Where...
Our next category, also with a top score of 2, is the music category. Michael, kick us off.
What is this out of? I forget. Is it, oh, yeah, 2.
This
you,
is 2.
You literally
two.
Just said that. Sorry. So I think in Lethal Weapon 3, I think I gave that a 0. Because
yeah,
the sax interludes were so grating and loud. I was like, I can't hear what these guys are fucking saying. This is so horrible. I think they must have listened to Future Me when they made this movie, because they toned it down a little bit. They made it in transition. You can hear all the off-the-cuff stuff during the scene transition. So I will go...
Okay. I'll jump in here and say I agree with everything Michael said. I also give it a 1. I think they nailed that perfectly. I would also put it in the tone. That sax hits that Los Angeles noir cop theme pretty well for me. Ryan's shaking his head. Let's go to Ryan.
If you listen back to Lethal Weapon 3, I love the sax interludes, and I think that is Lethal Weapon incarnate. So I think I was much higher then. And I lowered here to a 1. So I'm at a 1, but for very different reasons. Just letting it be known.
Fair enough. Brian, take us home.
I think it would have been more fun if they went with a needle drop on the beginning with a better song. Not
yes.
such a, yes. a B track there. All of the music sounded like it was pulled directly from the original Die Hard to me. It didn't sound original at all. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because, like, they brought in Eric Clapton to do the music. Well, he's one of the musicians on this. It's,
did not know that.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Michael Kamen, Eric Clapton, and David Sanborn did the music. And it's just,
that's why
I didn't
so
love it. So I'm going to go with a 0.
A 0. Hey. All right. So just 3 1s and a 0. I think that'll still average us out to a 1.
I think it does.
Just slightly. So. Yeah.
All right, fellas, we've got 2 categories left here. First up is the quips category. There's a lot of quips said. That said, I myself have a hard time remembering any. So for the moment, I'm going with a 0 with a chance to amend if anybody jogs my memory a bit. Let's see if Brian can get. Where are you at on the quips meter?
Dude, this movie's so quippy.
Uh-huh.
It's like every scene there's one. They button every scene with some kind of quip. It's a 1 for me, a full 1 out of 1. I feel like the whole theme of this movie is based on I'm getting too old for this shit. It's said multiple times, callback. It's so good. But you also get things like when Joe Pesci goes on his rant about everybody becomes fucking nautical when you get in a boat, a stern, a vast, all of this. I love the whole subplot with Murtaugh being on the take. He's like, it turns out Trish is Ebony Clark, and he's like, you are Boinking Her. He's like, I am Boinking Her. It's just, I love it. It's a good bit. Very quippy, so it's a full one for me.
That was a nice callback to earlier, because Rene Russo's reading one of her books when we first see her character. Yeah. So tied into the universe. Nicely done. Michael, where are you at on the quip scale?
I'm kind of in the middle. I'll go a 0.5 because I do remember enjoying a lot of the back and forth dialogue in some of the scenes. But I think where the best, most humorous lines are not in like the off-the-cuff comebacks, but it's really in like the long diatribes, like Leo in the nautical, or like Chris Rock saying, "Is like, I didn't call Afghanistan. What are you talking about?" Where stuff like that. So I don't know if I can really qualify those as quips, so I'll knock it down half a point.
Okay. Ryan?
We are our own makers of our own universes, so I'm going to consider those quips, and I'm going to say it's one, because I love all of it. I think, Kyle, did you say you had it? Chris Rock didn't click for you? 100% clicked for me. I loved every single diatribe he did. I loved everything Leo did. I thought even Mel Gibson's fucking quips outside of the regrettable 90s one worked, and I don't like a lot of his shit throughout most of Lethal Weapons. This is the only one that like really clicked with me humor wise. I think this is a full one. Loved it. 100%.
Okay. That averages out to a one. The final category, gentlemen, is the story category. This is the only category that cannot have a half point. It can only be all or nothing, zero or one. Does Lethal Weapon have a story? I'm not taking reins on this one. Brian. Kick me off here, bud.
You make me do this. Okay.
I
feel like it's convoluted, and there's a lot of unnecessary additional stuff going on with all the crimes that these Chinese people are doing. But there is a story. There's a story about
really
family.
The baseline?
There's a story. Listen, yeah, I mean, it's one or zero, right? So it is. Yeah. Is there a story or is there not? And I'm going to say yes, there is. It's
okay.
A one for me.
He's going one. Let's go counterpoint. Ryan, one or zero on the story meter?
Oh, there's no counterpoint. Like, if that's the baseline, there is a story. It's convoluted and messy, but there is a story. There, and honestly, I don't think it's that bad of a story. It's messy, but it's still fun.
No. Yeah.
I'll jump in, because I also agree. I'll give it a one. It has a through line. You follow it. It's also fairly easy to follow. I feel like it's better than the third one with all of its apartheid weirdness. And like the yes. diplomat, like
that's
you get it. It's counterfeit
one.
Money. It's government. I love how the guys that get rescued from jail, they make them stay in their jumpsuits like they're still in prison. So just so we know, oh, these guys are the prisoners. Kudos. So yeah, I give it a one as well. Michael, take us home. Story. Where are we at, buddy?
Yeah, I'm a one on this one too. I liked this story a lot more than three, because I honestly can't even remember what happened in three at this point.
Mm-hmm. Same.
This one, you have a clear, well, not so clear at first, antagonist, but then it's clearly between these, the police and the Chinese bad guys. I know what's trying to accomplish. There's heartfelt stuff with our protagonists and their families. It works.
Well said.
Our final bonus category. Oh, I'm sorry. Were you going to say something?
It's just well said.
Oh.
Good wrap.
Yeah, I agree.
Well Perfect.
Said.
Perfect.
Put a little bow on it for Christmas. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, our final category is a bonus category for the dope weapon. I think the other two guys aren't here, but I thought of an amendment to this one. Do we just give one generic point, or does it... Everybody that brings up a cool weapon, is that a bonus point? So can there be over 23?
I think it's just one bonus
point.
Okay. I don't know. Maybe we want to reward dope weapons.
Because I kind of feel
the movie has
considered
a bunch of them. They get a lot of.
I know the only other time I've done this with you guys, we like just did a consensus and was like, okay, yes, there are dope weapons.
Yeah.
One.
Okay. So we'll just do the one. We'll keep it generic. So that I won't jump into them. I feel I know what one will get mentioned, so I'll swerve here. I do think there is a dope weapon in the fact that I'm going to consider every car that explodes a weapon. And that's pretty fucking dope, because it's so action movie, like, I can't believe they're doing this. Literally every car. There's one that gets shot and it explodes. Like, just beautiful. So I say a bonus point for sure. Ryan, where are you at?
Oh, 100%. I'll go with, I really like the laser gun shooting the person in the back to make them stand up to then be shot.
Yes.
That felt...
Oh, maybe when he bounced it? That was...
Yeah. I was like, that's maybe not like a specific like dope weapon, but like that's a dope kill. So I'm going to count
it. It's a dope use. Yeah.
Yeah.
Brian?
I love the fight in the modular home and like using the leg of the table as a weapon. Also using a train, using rebar. There's so many cool things in here.
And Michael?
Yeah, using the table leg was going to be mine. I just...
Yeah, okay.
It was so badass. When he just like forearm shivered it off to separate it and then just fucking yeeted it. It was so good.
All right, gentlemen. We have a final score for Lethal Weapon 4. It's unfortunate, and I didn't go back and look at what we gave Lethal Weapon 3. But this one comes in at a 15.5 out of 23, which I feel is pretty damn good.
I think it's low for how much we really liked it, but because it's way heavy in butts and muscles.
The butts and muscles really lowered it.
Really kind of tanked the score overall. But hey, you know, it's what's in every action movie, and it's not hitting those, even though it is the defining action movie. So that'll wrap up not only Lethal Weapon 4, not only Action Movie December for 2024, but that is the last in the Lethal Weapon franchise, gentlemen. So
For now,
yes. But for the future, we need a new franchise, action movie-wise, that we can continue with Michael to anchor these months of episodes. And there's a few that I think everybody can kind of think of, so I thought maybe we could all kind of pitch ours and see if anybody has one that we all kind of resonate with more. Michael, what do you got? What are you thinking?
How about you guys pitch, and then, like, I'll give my 2 cents.
So okay. The three of us pitch to you, and then you be the defining factor. I like that. Okay.
Brian first, because honestly, I think he's, through Cape Podcasters and Beer Me a Movie, he may have been through more shitty franchises, possibly. So, like...
I've been through quite a few.
What have you not been through? That's what I'm interested in.
I have a list of 10 different franchises that we might have covered one or two of between the two shows. Three shows if we count Nerdy Thursday, but Sean's not here right now, so he doesn't get a vote.
That's what you get for being with your family on the holidays.
Yeah. How dare you? The nerve. I don't have to go through all 10, but there's a good list here.
I'm down.
Pick one.
All right, I'll start with one, the Bourne series.
Oh, okay. I like that. That wasn't on my radar till you said that, but okay. The Bourne series.
I think that's a great choice. I will bow out. I will be the Debbie Downer of that series, and I don't want to do that.
Ryan's picking Fast and Furious.
No, because I will also be a Debbie Downer for a lot of that series. I only really like three.
Well, we'll three of Ryan them,
not the third
out.
One. Third one's shit.
Because my idea is not really a series. My idea is to kick the can a little bit.
What's that mean?
And to do the unofficial Lethal Weapon 5, a little movie called Maverick, which is also directed by Richard Donner and stars Mel Gibson in a 1850s bank poker player role. You guys ever seen this movie?
Yeah.
No.
Uh-uh.
With James Gardner and Jodie Foster. It's great.
Uh-huh. And Danny Glover in a cameo appearance, too. That's my pitch. It's not a bad pitch. It's not a new franchise, but it's sort of a continuation of this one. It is Richard Donner, Mel Gibson. There's a lot of references
with a lot of Native American stuff. Pretty sure there's going to be some problematic stuff to get into. Could be fun. Could be bad. Who knows?
So that's my pitch. It's a can kick. But
I love Ryan rubbing his hands together to the thought of problematic stuff.
Ryan, what's your idea?
Not Fast and Furious. Sadly, I put no thought into this. I was going to just wing it. I was so intent wing on it. Reading and not fucking up the lines. You know what? Maybe it's too modern, but John Wick. I don't know that we've talked about John Wick specifically.
It's at the top of my list. Before I wrote anything else down.
So Michael, you're saying we're going to kick into John Wick?
If Ryan didn't say anything, I would have been like, you know, maybe picking between those three and then been like, hey, have you guys done this as like
an aside? Sean and I have done, I think, John Wick 1 or 2, but I mean, we can cover them again. Yeah, but that's fine. I mean, here's the thing. I love John Wick.
John Wick's great.
Let's fucking go for it. I'm totally fine.
Well, there we go.
All right. That's 2 years worth of shit, fellas. Because there's four.
There's four of them.
Four.
Yeah. Possibly five by the time we get to it.
Ballerina is coming out.
Oh, yeah, Ballerina.
True. Three's a bit of a sweet spot for me because Ryan and I saw that one in theater.
And it's got the Raid Boys.
Uh-huh. That's also tight. And the dude from Iron Chef.
I love that guy. Yeah, dude. The Raid. All the John Wick movies are so good.
Le Pacte de l'Ours. Yeah. The Brotherhood of the Wolf. Le Pacte de l'Ours. There we go, gentlemen. That's what we got. Do we have anything else, or do I do the plugs now?
Plugs, and then afterwards right into the plugs. Our next movie.
Hey, this is a plug. That's what it was, the next movie. plug us. Check us out. Hang out with us. Facebook, I need to do more of on there again. I got weird about it. Twitter, we don't do. Fuck you. Blue Sky, we're coming around sometime. But really, come hang out with us on Discord. The Discord link is in the bottom of every episode description. That thing is really popping off. People are chatting it up. I'm loving how awesome and open and cool everybody's being in the group. Everybody's having fun. And we just need more people to have more fun. It's cool. Come hang out. Everybody's having a blast. It's the hip thing to do. Also, check us out on Patreon. We made some references to it earlier. All of our potpourri talk, all of our just the usual tangent stuff that you love, the meat and potato stuff. Yeah, we're smart. We put that behind a paywall now. So that episode is over there. Go check it out. A lot of fun stuff. I forget what we talked about. Christmas movies, probably?
We talked a lot about Christmas movies and Marvel Rivals.
Yeah. So, you know, hot stuff, hot takes. You're going to want to, you know, give us a dollar for that. That's all we're asking. It's cheap, just like us. So there we go. Next week is the start of the new year. I know Dave is kicking us off. I know both of you guys know what he's picking since he's not here, so we'll go ahead and just throw water on his fire. Guys, what are we going to talk about?
We are going to be talking about Billy Wilder's Double Indemnity. And this is on, I guess, Billy Wilder specifically is on Dave's Rushmore of directors of all time. So he wants to go in the Wayback Machine, and we're going to experience what I'm going to imagine is going to be a good time. I've not seen it myself, but heard great things.
Same.
I've also classic not film. Seen it. So this will be a cool one to check out for all of us. I know Michael's going to watch it too and just want to chat his little face off.
Dave, so, okay. Personal plug. In all of my Jeopardy studying, like this era of Hollywood has kind of been a blank spot for me. So Dave's been helping me kind of work through some of this stuff. So I will definitely check this out with you guys.
Awesome. Well, good.
If you're on our Discord, there's a good chance that we will have it going in one of the theaters. So
you can hang out with us while we watch. I was upset Ryan was watching something today and I couldn't join in because I was doing other things.
It was a movie that came out last year. That was a Ray Harryhausen claymation tribute that looked exactly like an 80s claymation thing. It was really cool.
Damn. That's fun.
For 40 minutes. And then there was like 40 minutes of other stuff that you had to get through. Yeah. But that 40 minutes of claymation was real dope.
Damn.
Nice.
Now I'm double mad I missed it. Why'd you tell me?
There'll be more.
I love you
guys. I'll do more. Mad God will come.
lastly, of course, shout out special thanks to the audience. We love you guys. We would probably still do this without you because we just like talking to each other, but you guys make us feel not so silly and we appreciate that a lot. We just want to make you know that we love you. And even when we say bad things about you, it's just all a joke. So with that, Michael, would you please tell the audience what they can go do?
Go hang a salami? I'm a lasagna hog? I guess.
Love it. I think that works.